2013 as far as the unemployment rates go. There may be other recoveries, but unemployment is not expected to recover. It is still expected to exceed over 7% out into 2013, the latest figures that we're basing our trust fund projections on.
Mr. Nelson, one moment, please. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, if I might ask a question or a request.
Of course.
Mr. Nelson, I've been following the unemployment numbers closer than I really cared to, and I really hadn't seen that report. Could you make that report available to committee members at a later time? I don't suspect you have it with you, and how you came to that 7% in 2013?
Mr. Nelson. Mr. Chairman, or Mahoney, I do have a copy of it with me.
Yeah, well, I'm sure I'm not the only one.
Provide,
just send
I can
along.
Provide a copy. I'll
Thank
provide
you.
A copy to each of the members. That is the what those projections are. Obviously, Global Insight provides projections to the Department of Finance, and then we obtain our information from the Department of Finance, and then plug it into the effect on the unemployment insurance trust fund. And I have those numbers. I'll certainly provide a copy to each of the committee members. There currently is a federal extension in place in Minnesota. So if an individual exhausts their state entitlement, and about 40% currently of everyone who applies for unemployment is exhausting their state entitlement. There is a federal extension in place which provides up to 33 weeks of unemployment benefits currently. There's a proposal carried by Representative Mahoney because about 10% of all Minnesotans who exhaust state entitlements do not qualify for that federal extension because of some special rules and federal law. And Representative Mahoney went through this committee a couple of days ago and going to be heard in full finance next week. But to also point out, in the proposal which was issued yesterday in Congress, which is pending in the Ways and Means Committee in the House, are some additional extensions in federal law. And so as soon as we know of those, certainly present them to the committee. I spoke with Anita Newman this morning about some of them. They may present some challenges again because there are other people who will, again, Minnesotans who will not be covered by these additional federal extensions. So they may well present some additional challenges, and there are a few wrinkles in some of those proposals in Congress right now, which will present some challenges, which will be brought forth to this committee for further discussion.
Very good.
Stand for any questions regarding it. Please feel free to contact me at any time if you have any questions regarding unemployment insurance. Certainly be willing to come to any member's office and discuss it, provide any information you would like regarding the unemployment insurance program.
All right. Mr. Nelson, thank you. Representative Nelson.
I just got a couple of questions, and I too, in this last interim, have been unfortunate enough, I guess, to have to deal with the members of my local that have been out of work, and it's growing at exponentially, and it's some of them have had some issues, and I guess I believe some of these have been taken care of. But earlier this fall, there was some issues about people when they're applying first time weren't getting their checks in a timely, their first check in a timely fashion, and I think some of that's been taken care of, and I'm just wondering if you have any insight on that.
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, first misconception, don't issue checks anymore.
That's true, right.
We currently, actually we're much better than we ever have been before, meeting, again, as I said, there's all kinds of federal standards on timeliness of first payments. We were, in fact, last I saw, well over 90% are issued within within the federal payment guidelines. So to the extent there may be a few wrinkles for a few people, overall, we're far exceeding any national standard regarding prompt payment. But there are always glitches that occur. You know, whether somebody presses the wrong button when they're applying, checks the wrong box, you know, or any other type of issue. There's a lot of things which slow things down. If somebody has a severance pay issue or any of these types of things, we're required to resolve all those issues before payment are made. So, but anytime a constituent has a problem, please get a hold of me, and I'll make sure we can get it handled as expeditiously as possible.
Follow-up question?
One other thing is, the other part of this is that your office sends to our referral office with the carpenters the from time to time. This is an issue that kept again this fall, and I haven't seen him since then. But we had where they sent asking if Tim Mahoney has been laid off at this period of time. Is he on your referral list? And we were getting these faxes from your office, and I talked to a couple of people there. There was a glitch again in the computers, but there was no date specific. It was this person off, and that date part was blank, and so it was difficult, and it was a difficult problem of getting finding out, responding to it, and then it was when we tried to get a hold of them, it took us about a week or so to get a hold of somebody, a live person to try and tell them that we'd love to give you that information, but I have to know a date when you're asking me that this guy's out of work, and I don't know.
Mr. Nelson, any response to that?
Chairman, I can't respond to that exactly right now. Certainly, contact you later, and we'll sit down and make sure that issue is handled in the future. So, one of the issues regarding the skilled trades, law provides that if a individual is a member of the skilled trades in good standing, signing up with the union, who then, in effect, call it on the bench, because the union, if you find employment through your union, that's a search for work under the law. But we're then required, are you a member of that union? Are you in good standing? And so we do some follow-up on some of those things to find that out, and some of the requirements, and that may be where the problem is. And we are in good standing, but we don't say what period of time they were in good standing for, or, you know, or were they registered with the union, and that may be the problem. But we'll certainly contact you. We'll make sure that's taken care of.
Thank you. Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Chair Devney. Mr. Nelson, I'm just curious to see how we're faring from some of our neighboring states. Maybe not the Dakotas, because they probably don't have the size and some of the volume that we do, but maybe Wisconsin, Iowa, Illinois, you know, how we're kind of faring, not just with the unemployment rate, but with some of our compensation rates and our employment insurance rates as well.
Mr. Nelson.
Chairman, Representative Zellers, a couple of things about some of our neighboring states. Put it in perspective, we will pay more unemployment benefits in a week than North Dakota will pay in a year. The same kind of holds true with South Dakota. They're so small. Wisconsin, on the other hand, depending upon how you measure it, Minnesota may or may not have a bigger program. We're pretty close to Wisconsin. One of our big rubs, I'll just take the shot, is Wisconsin receives 50% more money to operate their program than does Minnesota, even though we're relatively the same size. That federal grant, that's a big fight states have regarding how they split that pie up, and not always, we think, equitably. To give you a couple of perspectives about the state of Wisconsin, the state of Wisconsin's unemployment trust fund will be in deficit status within 3 weeks, the first part of February, I'm told, perspective. Wisconsin, our taxes, regarding on taxes on unemployment benefits, on employer wages, relatively close to Wisconsin. They are a shade lower than we are. Minnesota's a little higher taxes than some of the surrounding states. Minnesota's benefit levels are, however, substantially higher than our surrounding states. The maximum benefit amount in Minnesota is currently $566 a week. In Wisconsin, it's $355. In South Dakota, I believe it's $290. So, with a little perspective, Minnesota pays substantially higher benefit levels than does the state of Wisconsin. Minnesota pays 50% of your average weekly wage. We just have a lot higher cap than do most states. Minnesota has the sixth highest benefit level in the nation, both on average payments and on maximum payments. Minnesota is, when we look at it all the time regarding, you know, tax rates on employers, Minnesota is not out of whack, if you will. We are a shade above the national average on average unemployment taxes on total payroll, which is probably the only way you can really measure it. Minnesota is just above national average. But then again, we pay higher benefits. Our workers make higher wages than they do in Wisconsin and other states too, but we do provide a better benefit level than they do in most states.
Follow-up, Representative Ellis?
Right.
Any other questions for Mr. Nelson? Mr. Nelson, thank you very much. Repeat performance. While Mr. Nelson was testifying, Representative Mack joined us. You missed all the introductions. So you get to start all by yourself. Just introduce yourself so that committee members and the public have a little better handle on who you are.
Sounds good. I apologize for being late. I am Tara Mack from Apple Valley and Burnsville, new to this committee, new member of the legislature, and it's a privilege to be here.
Very good. Welcome. And Jeffrey, you're out of the room working.
Yeah.
Do you want to... Somebody around here needs to. Do you want to take a moment and introduce yourself, please? Very good. Thank you for your service to the committee. Commissioner Sigum. A man who's fairly comfortable in these rooms. Welcome, and thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to appear before the committee today, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman Devney and members, I appreciate very much the opportunity to speak a little bit about your labor and industry agency, mission that we have, what we do for citizens of the state, for workers, for businesses, for homeowners of the state. With all due apologies, Mr. Chairman, to apologies to Representative Fritz and Representative Mahoney. Both of them earlier this week in previous committees have probably heard some of the
hour and a half yesterday.
It wasn't that long, was it?
Representative Mahoney, would you like to do the presentation and then...
I'm not touching it.
But apologies to those two members. I will probably state some of the things that I have in previous committees. Consistency is an important thing for those of us with small minds. Mr. Chairman, members, if I could, I'd like to maybe do three things. I'd like to, since the name of the committee is Labor and Consumer Protection Division, I'll would like to give you 3, 4, 5 specific examples of how our agency, how our department responds to the heading of this committee for citizens of Minnesota. I'd like to go through the various divisions we have within our department. Divisions will give you an idea of how many persons work, what the mission of that division is, what the funding and the dollar amount for that division is. Maybe lastly, I'll center in on 3 or 4 issues which are of importance to members of this body, of this legislature, as they brought it forward to me, either from this last year or this year right now. Maybe mention a couple of things about the Walmart settlement, which you may be aware of, that was in the paper yesterday. Speak very quickly about the prevailing wage, very quickly about the new independent contractor exemption certificates that we we do have, and very briefly, if I can, also about the potential, and I have to underline potential, of a significant workers' compensation reform bill being brought to you from the Workers' Compensation Advisory Committee, to which I owe a great deal of gratitude, and to Representative Nelson for his being present at all, if not nearly all, of our committee meetings over the summer. Representative Nelson has been a very, very diligent and person who has showed up at the meetings, and Representative Nelson, I thank you for that. First of all, recognizing the headline of the committee, the name of the committee, and Mr. Chairman, let me give you the examples, which I've mentioned before. As we look at consumer protection, as we look at labor protection, as we look at protection of citizens of the state of Minnesota, within the last year, our department has investigated and enforced child labor law. We have been investigated and enforced and provided penalties against businesses of the state that sell liquor, and have hired 14 and 15-year-olds to work in that establishment. It's against the law. We received complaints, we investigated, we enforced, and we penalized. We have, in regards to child labor laws, the law of the state specifically says that 14 and 15-year-olds on the evening of a school night or morning of the school night cannot work before 7 o'clock in the morning. It's a statute that you and I have passed together. And upon complaint, we have investigated and enforced and penalized, by the way, a business and businesses in the state which have hired 14-year-olds before 7 o'clock in the morning. We have looked at individuals who have been forced in their employment to buy equipment. Equipment, in this case, it's those who would be ski instructors, equipment more than what the law allows, and we've investigated, enforced, and gone out and received reimbursement back from those employees who originally were forced to pay more for their equipment than what the law allows and should have been the obligation of the business to provide that equipment. We have been with our OSHA department in Representative Zeller's district, in Representative Fritz's district, to recognize and work with businesses that provide for workplace safety. Workplace safety that is very, very important, and probably the key mission of our department is to keep people safe, to make sure they go home at night the same way they get to work in the morning. And in Representative Fritz's case, she joined us down at Faribault Correctional Facility when we recognized, I believe down there it was Adolfson Peterson, for a tremendous effort of putting resources towards workplace safety. In fact, we ended up doing that significant project down there, Mr. Chairman, without a recordable injury or loss of work. And this is construction. In the same vein, we were in Representative Zeller's district with the new Maple Grove Hospital that we finally got past, Kurt. took us a couple of years, but...
September 30th, yeah. Those of you taking track.
we did get it passed, and we were up there to recognize the safety that that company was bringing forward in its construction as it worked with our My OSHA department, consultation department, to make sure that that job place... be safe as well. I think, and I don't know if this is inappropriate, but Mr. Chairman, I think that was the DJ Kranz company up there that was the building that facility. So those are specific examples, members, of how your Department of Labor and Industry gets involved in either protection or in the safety mechanisms for consumers and for workers throughout the state. If I could, Mr. Chairman, then I will move into the second part of the presentation, and that's the dealing with the division. I'll break our divisions into five different divisions and just give you some numbers for you to dwell upon and to think about. First of all, the OSHA department that I mentioned may be our most important function, keep people safe. If you keep those people safe and they have fall protection, they have the first PPE, the personal protection equipment, they don't get hurt, you don't have to enter into the workers' compensation system. So that's why I would say that OSHA is our most important mission within the Department of Labor and Industry. Within OSHA, we have 99 employees, about $24 million. Most of that money comes from federal money, There is a state match, and we do use some of our assigned risk safety plan money for some of the consultation, which we do within OSHA. But a very, very good department. The employees are extremely, Mr. Chairman, I want to stress this, they're extremely performance-oriented. They're very, very dedicated. They're very performance-oriented. I have been on visits with them as we've gone out and done investigations, both upon a complaint and upon just saying this is a priority type of job site that we need to go to because we have more injuries than ought to be. And I've been very impressed with the way that the employees handle the investigation and follow through with either citations or with education of the job site. Secondly, workers' compensation. Was the revenue there is about $159 million. $159 million, about 90 employees work in workers' compensation division. The workers' comp division members of the, first of all, I should tell you, of the $159 million, $142 million of the $159 are for benefits of injured workers in the state of Minnesota. Now, most of those were workers previous to 1995. That would be second injury fund benefits. That would be supplementary benefits. Those of you who might remember in the reform bill of 1995, those benefits were eliminated after 1995. So, but we do pay those benefits to those injured previous to 95. Also included in that $159 million would be our voc rehab units. We have about 12 or 13 persons, voc rehab specialists that work as state employees throughout the state. And that would also cover workers' compensation benefits for uninsured employers. Occasionally, even though, as you know, car insurance, it's mandated that you have it. Workers' comp is mandated, but occasionally we run into someone who didn't have coverage for their employees, and we do cover them through our division. Thirdly, I'll go to the division of what we call CCLD, Construction Codes and Licensing Division. It's a division of 163 employees, $65 million, basically funded through fees, license fees, permits. We give issue licenses for about 110,000 persons in the state of Minnesota, professional licenses. If you're a plumber, if you're an electrician, high pressure piper, you get a contractor, you get licenses through our department. It's a very, very fee run department, but obviously it touches each and every one of you, each and every one of your constituents when you think about 110,000 licenses. Let's see, fourthly, I'll talk about our labor standards and apprenticeship division, run by a supervisor here is a lady by the name of Rosalind Wade, a very, very talented and wonderful person. She has a unit of about 19 persons. Those 19 persons are split into two divisions. Apprenticeship is 6.5, and labor standards is 12.5 persons. By the way, Mr. Chairman, for your budget, as you consider your $5 billion or our $5 billion difficulty mountain before you, this is the only unit in Department of Labor and Industry that gets general fund money. We get about $1 million of general fund money, $981,000, but it's the only unit that gets general fund money. So the rest of our department is run by then federal funds, fees, workers' compensation assessments that we make upon employers in the state. The labor standards unit, again, and investigates and enforces child labor laws, minimum wage laws, prevailing wage laws, and the apprenticeship program, of course, is run through our department as well with approval through our department. Mostly that is run through appropriations from the Workforce Development Fund. And lastly, Mr. Chairman, to support those other four units, we have what is called our General Support Division. And our General Support Division is made up of our research folks. It's made up of our IT folks. It's made up of our legal lawyer folks. It's made up of our financial management folks. That General Support Division is 118 persons, $23 million. So that is the
Department of Labor and Industry, approximately 490 employees, give or take a few, depending on what day it is. And now, Mr. Chairman, lastly, then maybe I would go into three or four issues which you may be interested in, and I'm sure other members of this body are interested in.
Please do, Commissioner.
Let me start with the independent contractor rule. This body found fit in 2007 to pass a law addressing independent contractors in the state of Minnesota. As most of you who were here know, we'd had a legislative auditor study saying that there was a significant misclassification of employees in the state. Because of that, there were some concerns about the consequences for workers' compensation, people not being covered. They were independent contractors until they got hurt, basically. Unemployment compensation or revenue. Taxes not being paid. We passed a law in 2007 that my department promulgated rules on in 2008. The first applications became effective in September of last fall. The law becomes effective January 1st, 2 weeks ago of 2009. And basically what it says is in construction, to do work, you're either going to be an employee, which, by the way, is the presumption. We're presuming people are employees unless they get an independent contractor exemption certificate. In all honesty, Mr. Chairman, there are far, far fewer IC certificates being issued at this time than we would have anticipated, than our physical note called for in 2007. As of Tuesday of this week, there were only 600 IC exemption certificates which my department has issued. We were thinking it would be in the tens of thousands. Now, there could be many reasons for that, which we can probably get into later if you would be interested, but certainly it does cause for some eyebrows to be raised. Maybe the law is working as it's supposed to be working and everybody is now being deemed an employee rather than an independent contractor. That's possible. There are other avenues that are probably possible as well, but it's going to take us some time to do some analysis. Workers' compensation. Mr. Nelson will tell you when he presents the bill. Right, Mike?
It comes out of the, whatever comes out of the...
whatever comes out of the WCAC.
WCAC.
Mr. Nelson, again...
Do you want to describe the WCAC to so new members are a little bit more informed on that?
Created in the 90s, was a Workers' Compensation Advisory Council by statute that provided there would be six members of labor, six members of business that would be on this WCAC. We take the position in this legislature or have that the WCAC is a balanced group, therefore the product has to have some balance, and the legislature usually has, at least historically since that creation, responded to the WCAC recommendation. And I hope that Mr. Nelson and I both hope that they will do so again this year. Representative Vandivid Abney and Representative Nelson, the Workers' Comp Advisory Council meets on January 28th. There are members on that council. There are representatives of members of the council here. I guess there aren't direct members here, but as most of you would look around the room, you see representatives of the members of the council here. We are bringing forward to them some very, very significant changes in workers' compensation to make this system better for Minnesota, and better for the two most important stakeholders that the system ought to be for. That's injured workers and businesses that pay the premium. Mr. Chairman, as you know, workers' comp is not without controversy. But if you could focus in on injured workers and businesses that pay the premium and say, is changes that the WCAC is bringing forward, is it a benefit to those two? Are we keeping those two stakeholders at the highest priority? I think you would like many of the recommendations that come before the WCAC. Now, out of fairness to you, Representative, knowing that you have tremendous amounts of constituencies in your districts, you have interest groups that are constituents of yours, there are a lot of other stakeholders in the system. I may be a stakeholder in the system because my salary might get paid somewhat by workers' compensation assessment. And I'm supposed to run the dispute resolution, and I'm supposed to do all the intake of first report of injury and stuff. So I would be one of those interests. But the interests on the outside are great, and they're all needed. Mr. Chairman, we need each and every one of them. They all provide a very, very vital function. But their service is what we need and buy for the injured worker and the business that pays the premium. I want you to focus in on those two most important stakeholders, because the other interest groups could be everything from insurance companies to bill scorers, from qualified rehabilitation consultants to job placement centers, from hospitals to chiropractors to ambulatory surgery centers, from trial attorneys. I can go on and on as far as the number of stakeholders that are in the system, but they are all there to serve the injured worker and the business that pays the premium. Sometimes we, and being sitting in your chairs, I understand how difficult this is. Sometimes there are other interests that come to the forefront rather than the injured worker. And the recommendations we brought to the WCAC, both commissioner recommendations, and by the way, Mr. Chairman, we set up four committees over this summer of stakeholders that have worked very, very well together, have had great common ground. I have to tell you, I've been so impressed with the way that the hospitals have come together with the insurance companies, with the way that labor has come together with QRCs. I've been very, very impressed and satisfied with the common ground that has been found to reform this system. We have one more big step left, and hopefully we'll be able to get through that on January 28th with a significant bill to bring forward to you. If it works the way it should, I would hope we would be able to bring forward a bill for you that will be a significant reform, be focused on the injured worker, and will be little controversy to you if we handle this the right way. Mr. Chairman, as I close with workers' comp, and Mr. Nelson knows much more than I do, I want to leave you with just two graphs. Our system is not in chaos today. We are not in chaos the way California and Hawaii and Texas work. However, Mr. Chairman, know two graphs, and you will know that we will have some difficulty in the future. The first is the graph that shows, and this is in our workers' comp report that we do every year. Workplace injuries are going down and down significantly each and every year. And that's really, really good. That's a good thing. It means that resources that businesses are putting in the workplace safety is working. It means that OSHA is working. It means that technology and new equipment is working. We're keeping people safer. More people are not getting hurt. That's good. The other graph will show you that costs of the system are continuing to rise, and rise per case, and rise rather dramatically. Now, that could be everything from my department and my salary to medical costs, to litigation costs, insurance costs, you name it, the costs are continuing to rise. If they were going somewhat in the same direction, you wouldn't have any concern, but this should be of concern to everybody. So we're going to try to try to solve it for you, can't, if we can, or at least make a best effort to do so.
As they say, good luck with that.
My hope is to bring you a bill that will sail out of here in 5 minutes, with Mr. Nelson being the chief author.
All right. Well, we did Representative Mahoney's unemployment extension bill in 10 minutes on Tuesday, so we can try to tighten up the timeline and see what we can do, Commissioner.
Okay. Thanks.
Any questions for Commissioner Sigel?
I'm going too long. I apologize, but there was just one other issue that I would mention if I could, and that's the Walmart settlement that heard about. You heard about in the paper. It's been in the works since about last September. It's a private action was brought forward by Walmart employees in the state. Part of the settlement of this private action is that the state of Minnesota will receive $14 million. Civil penalties paid from Walmart to the state of Minnesota. The newspaper article was a little bit wrong. If you read the newspaper article directly, you read it and said it was $14 million that would go to the Department of Labor and Industry. It's $14 million that will go to the general fund of the state of Minnesota. It's not going to our department, it's going to the general fund. It is a result of both statute and the Milner case of last May that basically said that civil penalties that would be awarded by a court or jury would go to the state, to the general fund. So we are trying to help you with your $5 billion deficit just a bit. just a little bit, but it's $14 million in the right direction, not the wrong direction.
Well, Fisher, my mother taught me, look after the pennies and nickels, and the quarters and dollars will take care of themselves. So $14 million is, I think, a nickel in current deficit parlance. So.
Well, thank you for your time, and thank you for maybe it might be some questions.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Fridham. We spent an hour going over this yesterday, and a couple of questions that I forgot or didn't get to. This pertains to OSHA. Many companies, particularly large ones, are recording their injured workers when they come asking for a Band-Aid because they get a cut. And you may or may not be aware of this, but it's creating a lot of bloody pocket syndrome where people will just put duct tape over a cut rather than go through all the headaches of going through their safety programs, because all the forms that they have to fill out and everything else just to get a Band-Aid. Many companies now are banning first aid kits in their on their plant floors or in their gang boxes or wherever. It certainly becomes problematic when a worker feels that it's more a problem than it's worth to go get a Band-Aid. I would certainly encourage you to ask your OSHA people to look into some kind of way they can stop some of that, because frankly I've watched a person put a piece of duct tape wrapped around their hand that they should have gone and got stitches on rather than go through the aggravation of going to a safety program. So that's something that your program probably needs to look at some point, just because of the paperwork in that particular deal. The other is, I'm just wondering, my second question, well, actually, first is a statement, the second is a question. You know, if somebody was licensed through the Department of Labor and Industry and they had a late fee on their license, would it be in your power to waive that late fee?
I think we should just skip that answer. Representative Mahoney, I seem to remember an amendment in the Commerce Committee on some building codes bill that might have been in a similar vein.
Kinda.
We'll let you off the hook on that one, Commissioner. Any other? We're not going there. Thank you. Thank you for your time today, Commissioner.
Cool. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members.
Okay. Next up is Mr. Brad Leto, Chief of Staff of the Minnesota AFL-CIO, and Ms. Jennifer Schaubach, the Legislative Director of the Minnesota AFL-CIO. Welcome to the committee. If you'd please both introduce yourself to the plate and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brad Leto, Chief of Staff of the Minnesota AFL-CIO, and previously had Jennifer's job here, and I'll make just some brief opening comments, and then Jennifer, you'll be seeing both of us probably at times, but more so maybe Jennifer in front of the committee. But the I just wanted to give you just briefly the Minnesota AFL-CIO, Jennifer and Tech, as far as who we, you know, who our members are, if you will, but just as far as the staff of the Minnesota AFL-CIO, there is the president is President Ray Waldron, and the secretary treasurer is Steve Hunter. After that, we have 8 staff people in the office. It's not a large office. We have 8 staff people and 1 intern. We have myself, Jennifer, then a communications director and a mobilizing organizing director, and then support staff. After that, also 1 intern that we usually have an intern to help out often with the communications and other items as well. Also in the office, you may have run into at times a couple of other people. One at the legislature, Wayne Cox, whose office in our office, not directly employed by the AFL-CIO at all, but Minnesota Citizens for Tax Justice. They have office space there. And also Mike Goldman, who you probably won't see at the legislature a lot. He's the dislocated worker liaison, but he's in the office probably, I'd say it averages 1 day a month, that would be, I mean, in total, that would be at sometimes he's in very late at night checking his messages and that sort of thing. He's on the road helping dislocated workers and on the road almost continuously throughout the state, especially now. He's very, very busy now and works with the Department of Employment and Economic Development as well and his officer. So it's he... Although office anywhere is a little a misnomer because he's pretty much living out of his car and working with unions and non-union folks alike. The other two people in our office, just that office that rent space from us, are we have a regional national AFL-CIO director who covers a number of states. Todd Anderson is his name. Covers a number of states, and so he's in. At a week at a time, then in other states, and he has a staff person that's there all the time, that a support staff person. So that's the folks in the house. I'll have let Jennifer tell you a little bit about some issues, and then I'll just follow up with a couple at the end that I don't seem to be able to, issues that I ever seem to get rid of. And the speech and the former speaker and Commissioner of Labor and Industry mentioned one. So.
Thank you, Mr. Leto. Please come back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, and Reagan. I do have to say that, you know, little kids in a room are just a ray of sunshine. It's so much fun to sit and watch her.
Especially one who is as well-behaved as,
yeah,
as she is. She,
yeah, my kids would be climbing up.
I know. Mrs. Zeller has indicated she takes after her mother.
Okay.
Very much.
No corrupting other people's kids, right? I'll give you a little background on who we are and what we do. There was a handout that we had that kind of gives a real overview of what we do. The Minnesota AFL-CIO represents over 1,000 unions. Those unions represent over 350,000 members statewide. We work with labor lobbyists from all unions, faith organizations, and nonprofits on a variety of legislative initiatives that affect and protect Minnesota's working families. Minimum wage, occupational safety and health, prevailing wage, unemployment benefits, like House File 4, which was before your committee earlier this week, thank you, workers' compensation, voting rights, mortgage foreclosure protection, and health care, just to name a few. Brad and I were talking about how a lot of times we are asked why we involve ourselves with other issues such as consumer protection. And our answer is simple. Our union members and their families are no different from anyone else. They drive on our roads. They are our consumers, our teachers, mechanics, plumbers, nurses, construction workers, nursing home workers, and active citizens of Minnesota's community. We believe that everyone has a right to fair wages and benefits, decent health care, public education, and access to emergency services. We take positions on legislation a couple of different ways. One way is that our national AFL-CIO takes a position, and that then becomes our position, like supporting paid sick days, which other positions come from resolutions passed at our state conventions, which we have every other year. And these resolutions stay on the books until they're enacted or they just kind of become in nothing. and the last way is our executive and general board will meet on a regular basis or on the fly to take a position on an issue as well. Our legislative agenda for 2009, which we should be getting out early next week, Diane and I were just touching up a few today as I was walking out the door here, we'll focus on three major areas that we believe encompass our concerns and goals for this session. The first being revenue. All options for passing the budget, or for balancing the budget, excuse me, must be considered. Balancing the budget by only slashing public services will make the economy worse for working families, and this is the time when they need them the most. Jobs. Preserving the existing jobs and creating secure family-supporting jobs must be a priority as well. And health care. Remember that when workers lose their jobs, and we're looking to lose a lot more jobs, they also lose their health care. So thank you for your time and for answering questions.
Thank you. Mr. Leiter, you had more that you wish to cover.
Just a couple of issues. Obviously, and you've already dealt, and Jennifer mentioned unemployment insurance, and we will be, Ray and Waldron, the president, and myself, or Jennifer, are alternates sit on the, it's not a statutory group, but Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council, which the chair also participates with, look at legislative proposals, and there will be some more probably coming through in the housekeeping bill of the department and some others that we met recently with the department on that would help some unemployed workers as well. I mean, more specific instances. The second is obviously workers' compensation. The commissioner mentioned the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council, which I am the alternate for President Waldron on. And yes, we will meet on the 20th. We also have conversations regularly with and have one coming up later today with the Chamber of Commerce on these issues as well. I can't commit that it's going to be major reform, as the commissioner says. I hope, I'm sure, but sometimes major reform is in the eye of the beholder, whether it's the business community or the labor community, or and so we try to combine, and sometimes that always doesn't be. It could be a major reform as far as health care or something like that, but that remains to be seen. And so we'll, but there will more than likely be a piece of legislation this year. The final one I just want to mention that is you're hearing a lot about, in fact, just probably heard a little bit about in the stimulus package proposed from Congress yesterday is the idea of jobs in that are going to be in a new green economy, if you will, and have been, along with others, have been working on the Green Jobs Task Force. I just want to, it's in kind of in the eye of the beholder. I think it was the construction industry, and in fact, the trades will build according to engineer architectural spec, whether that's a green job or not. Our state fair pavilion, which was built, I suppose you could say that was a green job by the construction industry. The fact is they built it as the engineers and the architects designed, which is now the first green building on the state fairgrounds. So that's a little, with manufacturing, it's a little different. That probably more is a green job, I guess you would say, or you can have, like, if you're building windmills, solar panels, that sort of thing. I just make that distinction because a lot of our construction industry folks say that, well, is it a green job or not? I don't care as long as I have a job. And so I'd say just that. But there is going to be, I think, legislation. One of the goals of the task force, I believe, is to kind of get ready, be available to, if there is federal money, as well as shifting around state, perhaps state resources, current resources or tax credits or those types of things, that we're ready to have the federal money line up as quickly as possible. And I think the Senate recently had a hearing from the administration folks talking about that exact thing as well. So the other I just want to mention too is that you probably hear, and I don't know if you're that simple, but there's the Minnesota AFL-CIO or the National AFL-CIO. There is also the other federation, the Change to Win Federation, which we in Minnesota we work very just to hear about both. I mean, we work very well together. In Minnesota, I think it's more of a issues between the two are probably more of an East Coast phenomenon, if you will, because we often work very well with folks from the Change to Win federations. I know we have people from both federations in the room and on the committee, for that matter. So I thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you both. Any questions for either testifier? Representative Zeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and for Mr. Vito or Ms. Schaubach. We talk about membership, and obviously your organization is looking at membership, but one of the kind of growing problems that I see is going to be our work base, the number of people out there. The baby boomer generation, some of them are already retired. Some of them might unretire after the way the stock market's behaved, but we're going to see a lot fewer workers out there, and maybe looking at it not necessarily just from the union standpoint, but from a worker standpoint, what you know, what do you see in some of the trends? I know it's kind of a long question, and I'm not going to push my luck with Reagan, but you know, just from a standpoint of
he's doing good. It's hard to come up to.
Yeah, we should have her here more often. Well, quite honestly, the only reason I got her to come was because she knew that Representative Mack was going to be here. So if Tara's there, then I'll go, Daddy.
Okay.
But you know, just from a standpoint of, you know, you're in the business of labor as well, not just the union labor, but you know, you're looking at the number of workers that are going to be out there, and in a way, it's kind of an opportunity because you're going to your members and non-union members are going to be able to ask for a higher salary, but as far as the number of trained workers, I mean, you know, what are some of the trends and what are some of the things your folks are doing to address where we're going to come up with some of these workers?
Mr. Leto, Ms. Schaubach?
Well, I can take somewhat of a crack at that. Certainly with the a number of unions have, you know, some of the immigrant workers and that sort of thing have, you know, have been, whether it be, I mean, construction or service fields, have been, you know, we look at that as probably immigrant workers in the future are going to be necessary, certainly as part of the long-term labor force. So we've been working with, you know, different unions, I should say, have been working with some of those folks as well, the immigrants and that sort of thing. As far as the I agree, it's going to be a challenge. It's hard to believe actually at this point today that it's going to be a challenge to have enough workers. I mean, just because of the huge number of unemployed. I mean, we have sectors that have 30% unemployment. We have sectors of 25%, and probably overall, we don't know the exact number, it's probably at least 15 to 20% across the board as far as union members. But you're right, long term there's going to be a need for that, and I think it's going to be honestly there is going to be a need for, you know, immigrant workers in the future, or people immigration into the country and legal path to citizenship. So I think that's going to be that is going to be a part of it, certainly.
I just wanted to say one thing, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, and Representative Zeller. I know there's one of the predictions that I heard at one of the hearings, which, you know, I go to so many, I can hardly keep them straight, was the massive shortage of teachers that we're going to have, because not only do we have a growing older population, but we have a growing younger population. And this is something that I think Minnesota can really step back up on and reinvest in our kids, you know, their health care, their future, so that, you know, when they do get to working age, we have an unbelievable workforce, an educated, highly skilled workforce again. And, you know, that's just going to be all the more advantageous to our economy.
Okay. Any other questions for the staff? Thank you both for your time. With that, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much.